You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Everybody, how's it going today? I'm Pylon with the UESP, and we've got a little bit of an exciting special video for you all today. We're coming here with the Call to Arms folks with the Imperial Library. So as you'll see, there's a few faces with me here, so I'll let them introduce themselves in a minute. But at first, I want to introduce our friend from the Imperial Library, Benefactor. How are you doing today, Benefactor?
Doing well. I'm Benefactor from the Imperial Library. If you're not familiar with the Imperial Library, it's a website that deals with archiving all of the lore for the Elder Scrolls. If you enjoy the lore of the Elder Scrolls, then please check us out.
Yeah, and I'm from the UESP, which I realize this video might go up on not just the UESP stuff, so I should probably introduce ourselves. The UESP is the unofficial Elder Scrolls pages. We're very similar to the Imperial Library and great friends and colleagues with them, whereas we document basically everything on the wiki that has to do with the Elder Scrolls games. So not just the lore, whereas Imperial Library focuses on the lore. We also focus on the lore quite a bit, but it's also just much broader sense in the game as the wiki. So we get along great with the Imperial Library. We love doing stuff with each other. We kind of have this relationship where our members kind of pass over and forth, and pretty much everybody belongs together. So it's really great for that. But Benefactor, do you want to kind of let us know what we're doing here and what we're doing with these folks today?
So today we're going to be interviewing Modiphius, which is the creators of Call to Arms. If you're not familiar, Call to Arms is a wargaming version of The Elder Scrolls. Currently, they are releasing Skyrim chapters, which will deal with the with figurines and setting of Skyrim the game.
Yeah, it's really awesome. If you haven't got a chance to check it out, make sure you go and look at all the content they've created for it. It's this, the models themselves are just so beautiful. Like I haven't been able to get my hands on any of them yet. It's been because it's 2020. Everything's a little bit harder this year, so I've been looking to get some of them. But even like some of the ones you released recently, the dragon. Oh my gosh, it's beautiful. So kudos to that. But yeah, we want to get a chance to talk to you guys because you're kind of the newest members of the Elder Scrolls family, which is kind of fun. I think you're realistic. You are the most recent game to come out that's Elder Scrolls themed. So that's really exciting. So why don't I introduce you guys? We'll start with Gavin. Gavin, do you want to introduce yourself and what you do with Modiphius?
Yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Gavin. I am the line manager for the Elder Scrolls line. I'm senior project manager at Modiphius, and I'm also the business visionary for the Elder Scrolls line as well, which means that I'm the one who pitches all the ideas for the new sets and new supplements and so on and so forth to Chris, and he's the one who gets to tell me, no, that's a terrible idea, we can't do that, or that's amazing, make me 5,000 of them. And that's me.
Awesome. And then Chris below.
Hello, so I'm Chris Birch. I'm the founder of Modiphius, and my kind of new job title is Chief Creative Officer. So I get to do lots of creative-y things, and part of that is working with Gavin on Elder Scrolls. So particularly, I stuck my nose in to write a big solo campaign, which is my big kind of topic of interest is solo and co-op gaming. So I'm doing the settlement building campaign, which we've called Fainhold Saga as a working title at the moment.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I was first heard about the Call to Arms that really excited me, because one is 2020 and we're not getting together with as many people and going to the game workshop style stores as much as we used to be. So hearing that there was going to be that solo element to Call to Arms was really exciting for me, because I was like, oh, great, there's something that I can really get into, because I've got three kids now, I'm trapped at home, so I'm not getting out nearly as much as I used to, but it's really nice that there's still an element of the gameplay that people can get.
I think it's just COVID has brought to the front the fact that actually there are a lot of people at home who don't have a lot of time for gaming, and it's you know, it's amazing to see so many war game designers, you know, churning out a quick and dirty or a proper detailed solo companion of some form for their systems. I mean, God, even Games Workshop put out a solo system for Age of Sigmar in the last issue of White Dwarf, I think. I was like, yes, they're copying us, finally.
I know, it's like the imitation's the sincerest form of flattery kind of thing.
Of course,
there.
Yeah. Like, okay. Clearly got the idea from us. Anyway, but so it's, and you know, when I was a kid, which is a long time ago, I grew up in a town without any wargamers, and I'd be lucky to, you know, get my parents to drop me over to the nearest town. I'd go and play old historical war games in a pub with 25mm Napoleonics or 6mm modern. Well, not very modern now, but, you know, and it was very, very hard to get a game in. So I would write all my own solo co-op gaming systems and just kind of figure out how to play myself. So it's, you know, so I've kind of kept that, you know, all the way since we launched Fallout and now Elder Scrolls. So I was like, it's got to have a great AI. It's got to have great AI.
That's brilliant.
You know,
let's
make that a key thing about it.
Yeah, it was always built into the rules from the ground upwards that there would always be a solo component to it.
Yeah.
And we spent a lot of the time trying to make it. And we also wanted to make it so that it wasn't two separate games in the same box, but there was a lot of commonality between them. So you can switch between the two relatively easy without having to remember a load of different rules. We only use this rule in battle mode and that rule in delve mode. There are, of course, differences, but we wanted to make sure that the transition between the two would be as seamless as possible, because then you can easily use both of them in any form of campaign play, which is something that Chris has picked up in Thanehold as well.
We also added, and it was amazing Bethesda let us do this, so we added the entire starter set to Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah.
So including actually beautiful 3D models that have got this nice ink wash on them. Our lead 3D guy, Johnny, did an awesome job on it. So my brother has been our minion helping put it together. He's really got into Tabletop Simulator during COVID, so he put the entire game in for us. So it's basically for free, like
that's
everything,
so cool.
Like all three starter sets and miniatures, even all the terrain. That's, you know, beautiful Draugr tomb walls and arches, so you can have a lot of fun creating dungeons. And so we just thought, you know what, people, we just need to let people play it while in lockdown, because if you're not playing it, you're not collecting it. So. So that was our kind of gift to the community to help them through the dark times. So.
Yeah, 2020 has been interesting. So that's actually one of the interesting questions I was going to ask you, is kind of how the pandemic really affected, because it's such a social aspect, having like the war game and the tabletop. But that makes complete sense that you're like, well, let's move a little bit of it to online and have some of that there too.
Yeah.
It's interesting that sales of miniatures have been pretty strong, I think, because everyone's been getting through their pile of shame gradually painting miniatures up, because they've got nothing else to do. And, you know, it's one thing at least you can do at home is paint. So miniatures have done pretty well, actually, whereas I think board games that don't have a solo or co-op mechanic, you know, haven't been as big. But actually, in general, the industry's done really well.
That's good.
Through the lockdown, it's retail that struggled. You know, you know, I feel for little stores who we've got half the traffic.
Yeah, we've had. I mean, there's been challenges for sure. We've had a lot of problems with our logistics, our global logistics, because you know, COVID has just figuratively torpedoed any kind of international shipping and transit, and we've had some real problems in getting product to people as well, and getting product to us as well. You know, we've had ships that have been backwards and forwards to port three or four times before they've been unable to unload containers and stuff.
The British, of course, are very good at stabbing themselves in the back whilst they're down on the ground. No, please, let me stab myself a few more times. So, you know, Brexit has come at the worst time, because not only are our ports shut because of the COVID increase, but and not only is it very difficult to get containers because they're all stuck in ports, but, you know, we've now got these massive issues of duties and having to sort out the new Brexit paperwork. There's big surcharges going on. I've just heard, like, you know, we're going to have to pay It's going to be another £4.50 surcharge on every kilogram being shipped between us and Europe, and Europe to here on courier packages. So, you know, anything over 2 kilos. So anyone in Europe sending us or us sending Europe is just horrific pricing. So a 2 kilo book is going to cost you £9. That's one.
Just in shipping alone, let alone all
Not in shipping, just in charges.
Yeah, so just in charges of shipping, yeah.
Let alone the shipping cost, yeah. So it's,
and let alone the cost of the book.
Yeah, yeah. So it's...
how do you keep your prices so consistent?
Well, sometimes we just absorb the price rises, but obviously with, you know, for the first month, we're just going to take it on the chin and absorb it whilst we figure out, because they've still got to do a deal. Hopefully they'll do a deal to give us all the common market, you know, because which basically means, you know, that there's no customs barrier between the UK and Europe.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then we'll just open a warehouse over in Europe and ship stuff in, and then we won't have all those charges, you know.
But one of the advantages we do have is that we have our own in-house miniatures manufacturing facility down in Cornwall as well. So all of the resin miniatures are produced in the UK.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and plastics are produced by our partners in China.
Yeah.
Which is really nice, because it means that we can turn the resins around really, really quickly. And the plastics we tend to have to order in large batches anyway.
Yeah.
Because of which is why we're not doing more plastics at the moment, because of China's shipping issues and cost issues. So it's but the great thing with resin, it, you know, doing your own resin, it means you've got more control of the costs. And you know, at the moment there won't be any changes in, you know, product prices, but you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Europe.
2021 is going to be an interesting year.
I mean,
across
the great
the
thing
board.
between here and the US, you know, it's fine, you know, there's no issues at the moment. So there we go. That's the boring bit of the conversation.
Yeah. I don't know. I find this stuff incredibly exciting to talk about.
Let's get into something more interesting then. How did Call to Arms come about? Were you Elder Scrolls fans before, or was your previous relationship with Bethesda just evolved?
Well, we started with Fallout. That was our big thing, and it was enough for the, you know, the first deal was like, let's do Fallout. And we did a really good job with that. We must have done like 500 sculpts. There was only like 3 or 4 that they had a problem with, you know, often because the model's based on some guy's girlfriend, and, you know, or it was, and you know, and often it's like, you know, she wants it to look like her, not, you know, not like the game model.
Yeah.
And, or it's, you know, there was the sentry bot that, you know, for example, that the head was part of the body. And the sculptor wanted that is the head is quite an important feature of the character, and they wanted it to be a separate piece. That was it. It wasn't like the head looks terrible. It was just like, can you make it a separate piece so that they can turn it, you know? We've had the same thing with Elder Scrolls. You know, they've loved the miniatures. But once Fallout was established and doing well, I was like, why don't we do the same thing with Elder Scrolls? It's a great opportunity. We've got a great system that we, you know, we'd rewrite for it.
Yeah.
You know that you love our miniatures that we're doing. And we'd always wanted to do a kind of cool fantasy miniatures game. So it was a bit of a no-brainer.
Did you guys approach Bethesda at first to say, hey, we would like to do this? Or did they approach you? Or was it like an intermediary?
We asked them. I think we were up for renewal on our contract. So we were like, hey, when we renew, could we add this in as well? We think we could do a really awesome job with it.
Even the original relationship with Fallout, was that a...
I've known them for years because I had a t-shirt company before Modifius. So I was doing video game t-shirts under the name Joystick Junkies. And I was always talking to Bethesda about doing some clothing. We never ended up doing it, but I got to know some of them quite well. I'd see them at E3 and different events. And when we got Modifius going, I was thinking about what we were going to do next. We'd done Star Trek. I was like, okay, we did Star Trek. What's next?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I know the people at Bethesda. Why didn't I think about pitching Fallout? Duh. So I kind of got hold of them and I said, how about, I go, Fallout, Warhammer? And they were like, yeah, I guess so. And and it, you know, it took these big deals take about ages. It's about three years to go through because, you know, they wanted to know who we are and the people who were doing it were really busy. And then they changed and then the new person got involved and then we got talking about it. And then, you know, and then suddenly it happened. It's funny with these things. Once they kind of give you time and they're like, okay, let's work on this, then it can happen really quickly. Yeah. And it's a big, serious deal and you've got to get lawyers involved and all kinds of stuff. It's, you know, it's tough to get going. But once you get going, they're one of the best companies we work with. They're super lovely. Awesome. They're all gamers. They love our stuff. We love their stuff. We love their games. It's kind of, there's no real downside. Yeah, I mean, of course, we pay them lots of money. So it helps a lot. But you know, we all make money together and we make some really awesome toys and get to play in this amazing, fantastic world. So, you know, we've probably all played enough. I mean, I'm only on my second run through of Skyrim.
I've got about three run throughs going on at the same time at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, I'm probably on my second one, but my first one probably has like 300 and some hours.
Yeah.
Oh, third time through, thousands of hours on each.
So
that's the great thing that we all shared a lot of this, you know, this all the shared experience that when you see a miniature, you're like, oh my God, that it's actually them, isn't it? Like, actually looks like
having that little physical representation of the game that you can hold in your hand. Like, as I look at behind all of our screens, there's all these like collectibles and stuff from different games here. It's just stuff like that. It's like, and there's something very special about having that like physical item you can hold versus it just being on the screen and you're playing with it. So that's one of the things like I always loved with like the tabletop and like the wargaming. It's like that physical.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny that I love playing stuff on Tabletopia. Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you can get all these miniatures and terrain and you can set it up and leave it there overnight because
you don't have to worry about a cat hopping up.
It's amazing, right? We can come back in 5 weeks and the game's still there. It's incredible. Yeah. No one's cleared it away. And the cat hasn't knocked three of the models off the table. But there's nothing, you know, there's something to like actually picking up a miniature and painting it and like building it. And you can't replace that, you know. So, so cool.
There's also something because we obviously we're deciding what we produce, and there's something really nice about thinking, okay, so I've got a new chapter coming up. I know what my themes for the chapter is going to be. Let's look at what sets we can put in there. What factions have I got? How do I break this down into sensible sets of five or six figures or whatever? And who are those five or six figures in a set going to be? Once you've decided that, you then get to do the fun job of, right, now I want this guy standing like this and he's firing a fireball, and you have to find all the reference pictures and that kind of stuff, which we then pass on to our sculptors, who have become very adept at reinterpreting my random ramblings about, they've got to have a magic effect around their hand that looks all glowy and spiky. And they're like, okay. And then eventually, you know, they come back with the T-pose and the figure roughs and that kind of stuff, which we all talk about. And, you know, we then approve and send off to Bethesda. But then the end process of that is when you finally get, you know, this little figure that you can hold in your hand and being able to say, yep, I thought of that. I posed that. They sculpted it. And now we made it. And it's awesome. It's really, really good.
Oh, I can imagine.
How much do fan favorites... how does that factor into what you design for the community?
So when we at the very beginning of my involvement with Elder Scrolls, I was brought on board to manage Elder Scrolls as a line. And at the very beginning, Chris had already run some community surveys, and we run more surveys from time to time to look at what were the most popular factions and what people were really looking forward to finding out. And we use that as a guideline for the kind of sets that we're looking for releasing. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind that this is a miniatures war game. And so there are a lot of figures that people want that just don't work as a war game and would look really great as a figure, but you know, don't necessarily have a place within a competitive war game.
And is there an example of that you can share, or is that all hush hush, top secret?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, one of the sets that people are asking for a lot, and is a set that I would really, really love to produce, is Cicero and the Night Mother.
Oh,
in
yeah.
their car. But, you know, Cicero on the battlefield doesn't really have a massive impact. So he doesn't fit into one of those regular sets really, really well.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that people will know if they see any of my ramblings on various social media posts that I put up is that my caveat is we will never make that until we do.
Yeah, that's always, I always love that answer for most things. It's like, why would you ever want this until you want it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's not to say that any of those figures, I mean, some of the other ones, like, you know, talking about Morrowind, for instance, loads of people say, oh, I would love an Almexia and Sothasil and things like that. And like, yeah, but.
Yeah. How do you add you a really, god into
it? How do you put that into a skirmish game? You know, it yeah. doesn't fit in.
Yeah. Vivek shows up and just recreates the world and then the skirmish was over.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a...
So whilst they might make for amazing miniatures or bigatures in some cases, you know, some of these figures could be absolutely enormous. Whilst they might make for really great pieces, we need to keep in the back of our mind that they need to be playable as well.
Yeah, that's fair. That makes sense too. So I kind of guess that kind of brings us to the next question of like, what is the process that you go through when you're starting to design either new models or new campaigns or scenarios? Like, what do you start with? You kind of just feed through some information or?
Yeah. So as the visionary, I set the general direction for each of the chapters. And within that, we break it down into the products that we want within that chapter. Chris has overall creative control on that. So as I say, if there's anything in there that he desperately wants, then he'll instruct me in which direction we need to go. If there's stuff in there that he doesn't think is going to work, then we can head it off at the pass. And you know, both Chris and I are both avid war gamers. We approach it from slightly different ends of the spectrum. Chris is very, very much a narrative war gamer, and I am very much a tactical war gamer, which means that we get a really nice balance of play styles appear in the products as well. So I will then present to the senior management team within Modifius my vision for the chapter, which will include all the products that I think that we need to include. More often than not, the SMT will have some good ideas about additional products that we need to put in there as well. And that then forms the basis of the structure for that wave. That's then broken down into individual products, which are then briefed. Again, each brief is then approved by Chris from a creative point of view, and the SMT are then passed on to a development team or external developers. So Mark Latham tends to do the backbone work for stuff. So he will do the card packs, for instance. And then our internal dev team will look at all of the testing and recommendations, and the end result is then a collaboration between Mark and the dev team. And then we also have products which are developed entirely in-house, and we're seeing a few of those that are just reaching fruition now. So the first and largest of those will be the Stormcloak Rebellion supplement, which is in approvals with Bethesda at the moment. And then for figures, I mentioned kind of the briefing process earlier on, how we go through that. You know, pull together a lot of reference information for the sculptors to work on, and they produce first drafts. And then everything goes off to Bethesda for their approval, as Chris mentioned at the top of the chat.
And they're kind of just like the final.
I don't, so far, the only feedback we've had for them has been practical things. So this writing is too small, or, you know, you've misspelt this word or something like that.
Yeah.
We've not had
anything Dwemer Rune with 18,000 syllables or like consonants in it. You missed the 8th Z in this. How dare you?
I mean, the good thing is everyone who's working on it, the sculptors and writers and all of us, they're all super fans for Elder Scrolls. Yeah. So there isn't someone sculpting a Khajiit who hasn't played around in Elder Scrolls and knows exactly what Khajiits look like. And, you know, they pop back into the game and spawn them to just remind themselves and take screen grabs and stuff. So it's super obsessive. And we always find people that love the world to work on it, because there's no point otherwise. Why do you want someone working on a world who's not?
Exactly. Like, you want the passion to be there.
Yeah. And the good thing is, do y'all use UASP and Imperial Library?
We use all sorts of sources. The Imperial Library, yeah, we've used it a lot for some of the law background. We use all sorts of places for our reference material. You're all bookmarked.
Always good to hear. About how many, just curiosity question, I just thought about, how many people do you actually have at Modifius, like, approximately?
It's 30 full-time, like, payroll people.
Yeah, and then I assume there's contracts and outsourcing and all that stuff. But
God, probably about another 10 who are equivalent payroll, but just in different countries, so they're just on contracts. But then probably about another 100 who are... just, you know, someone's doing editing whenever we send them stuff. Someone's doing a few thousand words here and there. Someone's doing, you know, we've probably got about 20, 30 artists who are literally doing as much art as they can every week for us.
That's
whether
amazing.
They're full-time or, you know, they've got a job and they piecework kind do of one thing, piece a day, one piece a week, you know, one piece every two or three days, you know, so.
That's amazing.
It's really good because there will often be those specialist skills that we might need that we don't need often enough to have somebody full time in house, but we can go to a contractor externally just to do this one piece of work, and then we have a big pool of people that we know will produce quality work on time and at the right price, which is really good.
Yeah, that's
and
that's
they get to, they get to know our product too.
Yeah, it just develops a good working relationship there when you have those people that you can always just count on for stuff that you wouldn't be able to have full time, but then it works out really well for you guys.
Exactly.
That's really, really awesome. I'm just looking through the list of some of our questions here. We've actually covered a lot of them already. I see some of these questions that are about future things coming up. So one of the questions that I know the community asked, I think it was the Imperial Library, is are we going to see any future Dragonborn variants that are not just typical humans? Like we have the Argonians and the Khajiit. Is there any plans for those kind of things to show up?
Yes.
Ooh. Like that. No other questions. I won't follow up that question because I know that.
A lot of people happy.
We're planning. It's very, very early in the planning stages at the moment. So this is potentially for chapter 4, I think.
Awesome.
Looking at a couple of different options for bringing more variety into the Dragonborns. I mean, the plan has always been that for every chapter, there would be a couple of different Dragonborn variants.
Yeah.
So we've seen in chapter 2 coming up, we've got the Dragonborn Steadfast, for instance, and we had the Dragonborn Triumphant and the regular Nord Dragonborn in the core set as well. And we've got more coming up. I've just finished briefing the two new Dragonborn that we've got for chapter 3. Which we released a teaser for at ModCon.
Yes.
Who is awesome. Just seen some 3D shots of them and they look amazing. Looking at chapter 4, which is, I'm just starting the pitch for that for the SMT to approve. One of the options that we're looking at is where in the past we've had sets of sort of adventurer followers and adventure allies, we might just do a Dragonborn set. And have sort of six different versions of the Dragonborn in it. You know, there might be a stealth archer Khajiit version. There might be an Argonian barbarian, you know, a Bosma something else, and just put a variety of races and kind of the archetypes of what you would see from the Dragonborn in it. And see how we go from there.
That's really awesome. So not to this question doesn't mean you're making it. I want to preface this in advance. But are there any areas of the Elder Scrolls games that you really want to make something for? We, as you said, we know that there's sometimes stuff that you can't make. But is there any areas that you've ever been like, oh, like I really want to build like the Battle of Red Mountain or like something like that from Elder Scrolls kind of history that you've wanted to, but maybe you can't, or it's just hasn't been the right time, maybe in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're not going to stay in Skyrim forever.
Yeah.
We'll move on to different ages in the future, or maybe a little sooner than the future. But we will move into other ages, certainly. And I mean, my first exposure to the Elder Scrolls was Morrowind.
That was the same as me.
And so that was, you know, I loved Morrowind and I loved the design aesthetic of it as well. Yeah. So at some point we'll be moving on to Morrowind. And of course, there's, you know, they're still live Elder Scrolls games at the moment. You know, we've got Elder Scrolls Online. We know that Elder Scrolls 6 is, you know, the next
coming
version
sometime.
Of Elder Scrolls is coming sometime.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, but for me, if it were anything, I mean, my dream product is a build your own Dragonborn set, is a multi-part plastic Dragonborn set.
Oh, that would be really cool.
But there's lots of challenges involved with doing that, and it's really, really not easy, and it's something that sits on our back burner.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's just hard to do.
Because if you can imagine, you'd need so many parts that to give the different options that you'd either have to have a set, I guess, that could make like six different models from all kinds of like body parts.
Oh,
body
yeah,
types.
That'd be,
like,
I feel
if
like
you have
be...
an Argonian in a robe versus an Argonian in armor, and you know, it's like
it'd be hundreds of pieces.
Just to throw out an idea, if you get to the Shivering Isles, you already have one model, which was the astronaut that guards the gate that you rebuilt, and he has different parts. So maybe some inspiration for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's so much we can do. I mean, as you know, there's so many awesome like types of gameplay. Like, you know, I want to do bigger battles. I want to do longer campaigns. I want to take people on kind of epic journeys with a handful of warriors, and you end up with an army, you know. So there's all kinds of fun stuff we can do, inspired by all those great books, you know, and the kind of stories of battles. And if you, you know, especially when you look at some of the, you know, the great concept art from Skyrim, clearly, you know, they've thought, you know, beyond just one hero running around. So it'd be great to replay that.
That's a great segue into our next question, actually. What are your thoughts about wargaming for the purposes of telling a story or interacting with a world?
So for me, because I know there's so many war games that do the competitive gameplay very well, there's no point trying to compete with that. And I come at wargaming from a storytelling perspective. So I'm looking at what story can I tell with the board and the miniatures and the components that we've got, and where can we go with this? Because I'm not really bothered about winning. And my challenge to us is always, what if we can make a story or a scenario where you actually don't want to win, because it would be more interesting to lose the battle because of your story gets to evolve. And you could argue that the beginning of Skyrim games is you lost the last battle, right? You start off as a prisoner. Whatever happened, you lost.
Yeah.
But wow, how amazing is the story now, right? Because you get to evolve and become this awesome, awesome thing. So everything we're trying to do, you know, like the Thaneholt saga is, you know, you make choices through the missions that affect who the final nemesis is going to be. They might be completely different based on various choices you make. The final scenario is going to play out differently depending on choices you make, depending on how you decide to train your troops as you build them up, how you, you know, it's interesting choices you make as you discover things, affect who your background is, like who were your ancestors, why were they important to this story? And so that's why I'm trying to build that into the war game as a storytelling exercise that, yes, it's, you can have a great one-off, you know, dungeon crawl with you and some friends against a bunch of Draugr or raiding a Stormcloak camp. I'm much more interested in the campaign storytelling because Elder Scrolls, like any other great RPG, is this big long story. And I'd like to think that we can, give you your own, you know, miniature world to evolve through and discover things about. So we're going to be seeing a constantly evolving product line that, we're trying to experiment with different things. We're going to go in different directions and try some really cool ideas. So hopefully it'll give lots of people plenty of stuff to play with.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Yeah, that's such a good outlook on everything there.
Yeah.
Awesome. What about you, Gavin?
Yeah, so I mean, I come at it from a slightly different place from Chris. And I'm, as I said earlier on, I'm much more of a tactical war gamer. So I enjoy kind of like, I enjoy kind of the intellectual exercise of using the units and the troops that I have to the best of their abilities. But I'm not a, right, you've got 1,000 points, I've got 1,000 points. Let's put down 2 woods, 2 hills and a house. And I line up this side and you line up that side and off you go. I'm much more interested in interesting scenario design that really tests people's ability to think, not just their ability to create the perfect army list. So I like those scenarios that are unusual, those battles that are a bit asymmetric maybe, that where, you know, your objective, going to something that Chris has said, your objective is not necessarily just to beat the enemy, but you have an objective you have to achieve, which you may be able to do without engaging. Maybe you've got to preserve your force, or you've got to exit off the battle, or you've got to hold this position until you're reinforced or something like that. But the kind of the classical tactical conundrums that commanders face that aren't just we're two equal enemies and we're meeting in a meeting engagement and fighting in the middle of the field, that doesn't really hold interest for me. I much prefer something that will give you an interesting game.
Yeah, that makes sense too. Yeah, because that's one of the like frame things with wargaming, is it's not as rigid of setups as like it's when you have a video game, there's like so many rules based on the actual game itself. Whereas wargaming, you can have a little bit more creativity with it. You can get a little bit more involved with the stories and feel more. It's just such a different scenario, but it's still kind of that same base. I love it. I just get excited.
Yeah, I also think that if you are, I mean, it doesn't necessarily apply so much with Elder Scrolls, but if you're looking at wargaming as a tool to, you know, refight historical battles, you're very rarely going to find a historical battle where the two sides were even, because what sensible commander would engage the enemy on equal terms?
Yeah.
You know, I think it was General Patton that said he wouldn't engage without a 5-to-1 advantage. It doesn't make for a great war game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like every game just like, okay, well, let's fight. Oh, yeah. So we know this is going to end. And yeah, you don't want the end of them, like you were saying, with like the battles and stuff like that. You don't necessarily want to know what the ending is going to be when you start it. Like there's some historical in lore of Elder Scrolls battles. Like we know what happened. You don't necessarily just want to tell that story of like being like, oh, yeah, this is when the Nords won. So if you're on the Nord team, guess what, guys? You're going to have a better time.
It's interesting that I think historical wargamers were the first real narrative wargamers, because they recreated battles that actually weren't even to see what would happen if whether the other side could win.
If there are changes they made.
Choices. Yeah, and they weren't, you know, historical wargames are typically, you know, when you're refighting games, are not balanced at all from a points perspective. So it's quite interesting that it's, you know, and I think that's more interesting. I'd rather be on an outmatched side, try, you know, it's like a chess puzzle. Yeah. It's like, how do you get out of checkmate? Okay, wait a minute. I've cracked it. If I do this and this, I can hold out long enough and get off the board with half my force and get a minor victory or whatever, you know, it's that puzzle that you want to get through.
I also think that something that Chris is saying about, you know, sometimes being defeated can be more interesting than winning easily. You know, if you look at the classical hero's journey, Ramsay Campbell talks about the hero's journey. You know, part of that is being defeated. It's the end of The Empire Strikes Back. You know, it's at the low point before you rise up to your triumph. And that makes for really compelling storytelling when, you know, not everything always goes right for the hero or the heroes.
Yeah.
And overcoming adversity like that is a really, really great storytelling mechanic.
What are the other questions we wanted to do? What is one of the things that you're most proud of from Call to Arms? Like if they're like a specific figure you've made or mechanic you've kind of told with them, like I know that you're proud of, you love the fact that you've brought that like single player element to it, but is there anything specific that you look at, you're like,
the dragon. I mean, we always knew we were going to be doing a dragon.
We need to talk more about the dragon in a minute too.
Chris was very, very clear that there was going to be a dragon.
You can't not make dragons in Skyrim, right?
You can't have a dragon.
Doesn't matter how big the game is. It's like
So you know, finding a way to bring the dragon to the tabletop in a way that is, first of all, that it isn't just half the tabletop. and also in a way that means that, you know, you can have it there and fight it and feel like it feels in the game as well. And, you know, the rules for that are still under development at the moment. We're still tweaking them, but I think it's going to be a really, 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 really great experience for people. And personally, I also really like the oaths as well, because that was my, the oaths were my idea. So I'm really pleased that they got in.
Yeah, I thought the oaths were, do you want to explain the oaths for anybody that might not know kind of what they are there?
Yeah, sure. So it's not a revolutionary idea. There's plenty of other systems that use it, but we've adapted it to Skyrim. So the idea of the oaths is that you can, before the battle starts, each side may have their own oaths, or they may buy a common selection of oaths that they can choose from, that will be essentially your hero swearing that they will accomplish something during the mission. So it might be, I will slay the first enemy, or... you know, in the game that Chris and I played recently for ModCon, we had two oaths, which were that we would kill an enemy before it got past a certain piece of terrain, and we would kill an enemy by dropping a giant portcullis on it. If you achieve those oaths...
So specific.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, there's two gaps that the enemies have to come through, and you can drop portcullis on the gap. If you achieve those oaths, you get extra victory points. But if you don't achieve the oaths, you lose victory points.
Oh.
And, you know, in the back of my mind, I always had the two songs that you hear everywhere in Skyrim, which is, you know, the Dragonborn comes, which is exhorting the deeds of the Dragonborn. And then there's Ragnar the Red as well, that talks about this boastful hero who is not all that he could be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always had it in the back of my mind that when we move on to campaign stuff, for every oath you succeed at, you know, maybe you can assemble them into like epic poems or something. You get four of them together and you get a bonus. But the flip side of that is that if you keep failing your oaths, people will start writing nasty songs about you and you can lose reputation or something. So that's something that I'm really proud of.
I hadn't thought of it as the idea of like these are basically like lines, lyrics from some of the bard songs, and that's what they're going to sing. This is the triumphant thing, or the terrible mistake you made.
Yeah.
I love that concept. You know, that's great.
Dragonborn, the rubbish, he ran away. He ran away.
That's awesome. And then Chris, do you have any proud moments that you can think of?
I guess I'm living through it because it's the campaign I'm working on at the moment, which because I'm trying lots of mad ideas that, you know, I've picked up over the years and from, you know, the way the industry's going to kind of create this campaign and put lots of cool stuff into it. So, you know, it's getting, being able to play in that world is the fun bit for me. So we'll see whether it works.
Awesome. So back to Gavin talking about the dragons again. Is there anything you could really share? Because, okay, I saw that and, like, literally was just like, I need to have that. Because it's beautiful, the stuff you shared with it. But you haven't shared, at least as far as I've seen, too much information about how they're going to work and what they're... Is there anything you can share yet, or is it still pretty early in the development there?
Well, there's some stuff I can share with the caveat that this is all
it
true and it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the way that we're looking at the moment is we have the three sizes of cards at the moment. So we have the mini Euro cards, we have the poker size cards, and we have the larger educational size cards. The dragon will now have a larger size card beyond that. So we're
just like a poster at this point.
Yeah, it's sort of US letter. I mean, they're all going to be print and play, so it's unlikely that we'll be actually making these cards until we do. the dragon's got a larger card, and within that, you at the moment you can equip various different dragon traits. So, you know, it might have a certain type of breath that it uses. It might have certain attacks. So some dragons, like the serpentine dragons, for instance, from Dawnguard, I think, they don't have a tail slap attack. And some of the dragons don't have a wing bash attack, and some of them are more likely to bite you, and some of them are more likely to try and claw you and that kind of stuff. So you can kind of build your dragon up in specs. And then also, depending upon the strength of the dragon as well, will depend upon what its stats will be. So Mjolnir is the first dragon that you meet, and although he's been around for ages, he's a relatively weak dragon in terms of dragons. So what we'll be seeing to start off with will be kind of the entry level dragon entry, which then means that in the future, as we go on, you know, we can introduce more more of these print and play cards so that you can modify your dragon to be different things. You know, you might decide you want it to be an ethereal dragon, for instance, and we can give it a power where it's, you know, that's one of the summonable. I think there's a couple of summonable ethereal dragons in different places. Mm-hmm. Or it might be that it is older and maybe it is more aggressive, and, you know, all the way up to Alduin with his unique shouts that he uses and stuff like that.
That would be such an interesting campaign, actually, with Alduin itself. It's like, okay, stop the world from being eaten. Good luck.
Yeah, it's motivation for sure.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of be on the same page for that one. Well, it's absolutely awesome. I literally have the model up here right now on my screen. It's so good. I'll probably put it in the video so that we can look at it. But like, it's the sculptor did an amazing job on that. Like, it's just stunning, the work on that.
I was blown away.
We've got some amazing sculptors. You know, all of the, and I am constantly amazed by the level of detail that they get into the figures. Oh.
Absolutely. And that's okay, so it's 32 millimeters, so that's a big boy. He's pretty big there. That'll be interesting to see. Yeah. I mean, you could have gone absolutely massive, but then you get kind of the problems of having to have
It's I mean, a part of the problem is we want to keep the shipping weight down. We also don't want to be breaking people's tables with a huge chunk of resin as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be, you know, the resin version of it, because the resin would be pretty heavy there.
And there's practical concerns to think about as well, that when we master these, they're often 3D printed as well. So when you look at the splits, one of the constraints is A, the cost of a really big 3D print, and B, finding a print bed that is large enough to be able to print large pieces of miniatures like this. So you always have to keep it in the back of your mind, how are we going to manufacture this when it's complete as well. You know, having a dragon rearing up with its wings outstretched is great until you can't fit the wings on a 3D printer bed without splitting them half down the middle.
Or having it like, well, every like one out of 10 of these that we ship doesn't have a wing when it gets to the end. It's just so big and massive. Yeah, that's really interesting. But yeah, I'm really excited to see what you guys are having more coming in.
Yeah, and the rule sets for the dragon, you know, will come with not just the rule sets as well, but we're sending them out with, I think we've got like 4 or 5 dragon-specific scenarios, and then rules for including dragons in some of the existing scenarios as well. And I know he's going to make a guest appearance in Thanehold as well, I think, Chris?
Maybe.
But it also gives
place for
it also gives us a template as well if we want to do other epic creatures in the future as well. So if we wanted to do something like, I don't know, giants or, you know, silt striders or something like that. Not that you do much fighting of silt striders, but you know, along those lines, mammoths or something. I don't know.
Actually, a campaign about fighting like a mad silt strider that's escaped and ravaging a town or something like that. That sounds glorious.
Or you could do a Dwarven Colossus. There's already a figure for it. You can see it behind Pirates.
Yeah.
That'd be a fun one, too. Yeah, the more Dwarven Ruin stuff would be really interesting. Well, was there any other questions you wanted to go over, Benefactor? I think we're probably running close enough.
The last one that I wanted to ask about is when it was first announced, there was originally going to be some launch party scenarios and campaigns. Whatever happened to those?
They exist. They're still there. Just, you know, when we are allowed back out of our caves into the daylight and the, you know, the great tempest has passed, then we'll be looking at our organized play support. So the plan was always that we would have 2 threads for organized play, one of which would be a narrative thread similar to what you see for what we've done in the past for Fallout. And the other one would be a set of tools to allow stores and clubs or whomever to run their own competitive games or leagues and that kind of thing. So they exist. It's just conditions just are really not conducive to supporting organized play at the moment.
Yeah, that's understandable too. Like, it's people, you also kind of don't want to encourage people right now to be going out having parties and playing. Like, if you could push people more to doing the things at home, then it kind of that works out well.
Yeah, that's certainly part of it as well. You know, would it be responsible for us to be sending out all of these organized play kits and getting, you know, all these gamers suddenly struck down with COVID because of us?
Yeah. And we've got a lot more solo support coming. So the Civil War book that's coming is a versus campaign where you're fighting your way across Skyrim. But there's also a whole chapter on how to fight it as a solo game as well.
Yeah. You can fight the entire Civil War campaign as essentially a series of linked delve mode quests where it's your band of Imperials or Stormcloaks fighting against the opposition as adversaries throughout the book. You have to lose a little bit of narrative fiat here and there to make sure that you're not just, you know, winning off of your own GMing choices. Yeah. But yeah, you can run the whole thing as a solo campaign.
Amazing. Well, I think that wraps up all the questions we had for you guys, but I do believe Gavin mentioned that you have some exciting surprises to share with us, so I might...
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier on that we're, you know, we're going to be looking at other eras at some point, and actually we've done some work on that already. So we have a new set that will be available for pre-order in... the first part of next year, be shipping towards the end of quarter 3, which I think you guys might be interested in. So if I just...
I also have no idea what this is at this point. They've kept it a complete secret from us, so I'm really excited.
We're excited, really excited.
Yeah.
And these, I'll say, these sculpts have actually been around right since the beginning, because when we first got the deal, If you know Elder Scrolls as a brand, you've probably seen these characters quite a lot.
Here we go.
Oh!
Whoa.
That looks...
Those are amazing.
Those look so good. So, okay, let me just take a quick look off the top of my head there. Is that Mana Marco?
Yeah,
it is.
Oh, so we've got the ESO crew in here. That's so exciting. Yeah, so describing what I'm looking at right here. Oh, this is amazing. So we've got the Elder Scrolls Online heroes from kind of the cinematic trailer from the original game. We've got the Nord, the Breton, and the High Elf. Nord's kind of like the warrior type. Oh, those look so good.
They're absolutely amazing.
Those are brilliant. Oh man, looking at this. So yeah, so those are the original heroes from that, and then we got Mana Marco, kind of the most famous necromancer, I will say, in all of Tamriel.
Yeah,
it took me a second too, because I was like, oh, go ahead.
He's got a staff of worms as well.
Yep.
Oh there, man, look at that. Oh, be still my wallet. Just looking at these are absolutely stunning. So yeah, he's just going through Mana Marco, and now we've got the elf. Do you guys have names for these characters at all, or are
their official names are the Nord,
the High Elf, the Breton.
Doesn't the elf sorceress have a name? I've got a feeling, because she's featured in quite a few videos now.
Yeah, I don't think she has a name that we've ever heard. That's what I was just curious about. She looks exactly like the actress from Lost, Evangeline Lilly. I've always thought, like, looks identical to, which I always thought was really funny. So, in my head, that's been her name.
Yeah.
Oh, these are absolutely stunning, though, guys.
I'm amazed. Yes.
They'll be available first quarter next year, and we're also going to be releasing a little mini expansion for them as well. So you'll have all of the stat cards for Mana Marco and for the Staff of Worms and for those guys, with a few scenarios for them as well.
Yeah.
That's
so you better use them as adventurers in the game, of course. Up to you if you cross the streams, but you know, down the line, of course, we plan to return to ESO.
That's so cool. And it kind of makes sense. Yeah. We don't know that the Vested from the Elder Scrolls Online actually can die. So is it possible that they'll be able to, they'll still be living in obscurity somewhere as these crazy powerful creatures in Skyrim? So
their power level is much higher than the heroes and the characters that we've seen for Skyrim so far. So you can absolutely use them within your Skyrim games, but they are monsters.
I can imagine.
I mean, the three Manamarco is designed to fight the other three by himself.
Oh, wow. Well, wow. Understandably.
Which tells you a little bit about his sort of power level.
I will say that y'all are doing justice to Manamarco that I'm really happy about. I'm glad you didn't go with the Oblivion version.
Yeah, that's not really Manamarco, though. He's just a guy who calls himself Manamarco.
Yeah. Oh, this is absolutely exciting. Wow, I'm a huge Elder Scrolls Online fan myself, so seeing that alone just is extraordinarily, like, the hype I have right now for that. I'm really glad you guys are digging into the second era.
I'm sure the Elder Scrolls community is going to love this.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Because those, I think I have, like, the Funko Pops of all those three characters right behind me, too, which is kind of funny. Right. So it's, like, having the actual models. So you said there's going to be in the future an expansion within that timeline of Elder Scrolls Online. Like, you're just releasing the characters for now, and in the future so you're going to do a...
The expansion that we're looking at focuses on those four characters, and actually it's based around some of the action that you've seen in the cinematic trailers as well. So you'll see some scenarios that reference those, and it may well be that they use some of the miniatures from elsewhere within our Call to Arms range. So, for instance, I think it was the Morrowind trailer that had a load of the Dwemer animalculi running around with the spears and what have you. Yep. So we're the spheres and the centurion and the spiders are all part of our next release chapter.
Amazing.
That we announced.
Yeah, I get what about the story in there too?
There was a warden that was a part of that trailer as well.
Yeah, so we do still have some more. We do still have some more sculpts for Elder Scrolls, because, as Chris said, there were some of the earlier sculpts that we did, but then we decided to focus on Skyrim. So yeah, you might see the warden at some point with his bear.
I think Gavin's just like, yes, there was. Zip. I like that. That's so exciting, guys. That's going to be a really big. I'm excited for you guys to get that out there too, because I think that'll be a big hit with the Elder Scrolls community at large. Just look, like, as soon as I saw those, I was just like, wait, no. Oh, it's so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. We've also got another little bonus for you as well, which is we're going to be releasing an exclusive scenario that you guys are going to be hosting for us, which is great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you'll be able to find that on the Imperial Library site to begin with, and I think we'll be throwing it up on UESP after a little while once we get it all documented there. But since Benefactor did so much work getting this all set up and working on it, it makes sense to have it all there first, which is great. But that's really exciting, yeah.
It definitely is exciting.
Do you want to give a little synopsis or a little high-level idea of what the scenario entails? A little tease for everybody?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. It's quite a small scale one. There's not loads of models involved in it, and it focuses on some of the more personal stories within the Civil War in Skyrim, and it's all to do with switching allegiances and trying to recruit people to your side within the war. And there's two of the iconic heroes of the war are trying to convince people that their side is the best, and they're in competition with one another.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, unless you guys have any other incredible surprises like that one for us, it might be awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for letting us chat with you about Call to Arms. It's been fantastic. It's been really nice getting to know you guys and learning a bit more about the games too, and I really appreciate it. And thank you, Benefactor, and everybody at the Imperial Library for helping get this set up too. I'm really excited about it, and I can't wait to see what else you guys come up with in the future.
Definitely. It's been great.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, guys.
I'm Pylon with the UESP, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in too to check this out. I think you guys will be very pleasantly surprised about what's happening and coming up in 2021, and we hope to see you guys again soon. Thank you guys, everybody, again.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.